Hello, my friend. It is ADHD coach Catherine here again with ADHD Powerful Possibilities, exploring the edges of what is possible for all humans with ADHD and thinking in terms of possibility rather than productivity, which is ironic because today's episode is all about time, how to handle our time rather than manage it, the exploration of playfulness and experimentation, and a tiny bit about habits. Yes, I said habits, the five-letter word that is second only to the four-letter word goal in making many people with ADHD shudder and run away in shame. Please don't run away. We've got some really fantastic information about habits coming up, and I am looking forward to sharing it with you. I want to say thank you so much for the great feedback on the procrastination episode. I think it's a really important one, especially at this time of year. We're in Q2, many people with businesses or who are teaching, who are organising other people are feeling a bit anxious that it's already the end of April 2024. And maybe you're thinking, why do I feel like I'm always busy and nothing gets done? Or why do I keep putting things off when I've got so much to do? This week, the episode is generally about time and how we interact with it. I know that I keep wanting to say time management, but I don't mean time management in the traditional time and efficiency sense. When you think of time and planning and productivity, which is another word I'm not very fond of, many people with ADHD immediately start to feel the same kind of shame and guilt we feel with procrastination. So I wanted to bring that in as a follow-on from our discussion about procrastination, which involves a lot of saying should, a lot of shame and a lot of guilt. There are episodes on time and dealing with time back about 10 episodes ago from this one. And I will include a link in the show notes to the previous episodes about time and why time is so confusing for people with ADHD and what it is that we experience when we talk about things like time blindness or now, not now thinking. But you've probably heard all of that and you understand that time is now or not now. You understand that you find it difficult to estimate how long things are going to take. You understand that one of the ways to get things done is to break it down. It's still hard. What can you do? This week, we're going to talk about some more advanced ways to think about it. And when I say advanced, I don't mean you need to have a degree in any sense. It's the idea, the basic understanding of time, which is a number of minutes per hour and what we can accomplish in that, isn't really enough if you have ADHD, and it's certainly not enough if you're trying to do something remarkable with your time, whether you are a business owner, a creative, a parent, a teacher, it doesn't matter. If you want to do something meaningful with your time, simply knowing how many minutes are in the hour and how long something takes isn't going to be enough. And one of the reasons we find time and time management difficult is because the tools that have been invented for it so far often rely on a neurotypical way of managing information and data. And for many of us, that's just not helpful. We may be much more visual. We may struggle with numbers. We may find the whole idea of measuring it just too much effort. It's another job on top of what we're trying to do. So we don't try to measure time. And then the time, as one of my clients said, the time slips away. We have time slippage where an hour can disappear in what feels like 5 minutes, even if we're not doing something that we really enjoy. I have been experimenting on your behalf with some artificial intelligence tools, which I'll talk about in a minute. And then I want to talk a little bit about the value of experimentation. And this is a slightly different way to think about it. And it's a bit of a story, which I hope you will enjoy. Finally, when we get to the habit part of it, I hope you will hang around and not feel like this isn't for me, I can't make a habit, it's not relevant. Again, this could be the time that the information makes sense and you suddenly discover, oh, wait a minute. I'm not saying that this is going to solve your problems, but it might help you to work out how you are going to solve your problems, which is what coaching is about. you would have to have been living under a rock or in a cave up in the mountains not to have heard of artificial intelligence tools like ChatGPT, Gemini or Claude, whatever they're calling it now, and newer tools like Kin AI, ones that form conversations, conversational model. And there are whole books, reams of books written about how to use ChatGPT to get any kind of information about the problems with using AI. Coming at it from a neurodivergent perspective, I would say I think it's one of the most exciting opportunities for us in many years. And I will explain. When somebody says to you, I want you to do this task, and your brain automatically jumps to the end result, the common advice is to break it down into steps. What we hear is, I'm going to give you 50 tasks instead of one, and we switch off. We give up. Or we get through the first two or three and think, no, I'm not interested. What I've been doing with ChatGPT, I've been using the OpenAI model, GPT-4, which is the paid subscription, mainly because I can talk to it for longer. I have been asking it to help me break tasks down into chunks, and then within each chunk, go through each step. And I'm using it to ask questions and say, does it make sense to do the steps in this order? What would happen if I tried it in this order? And I'm using it as an external brain. I'm using it as a verbal whiteboard, because you can talk to it, which is slightly less effective than the typed input. But instead of having 50 tasks, I'm breaking it down into 3 to 4 stages or chunks, and then looking at each one individually. And the other thing that I've been doing with AI is asking it to help me design a daily routine for myself. I really struggle with routines. My family has a wide variety of things going on. We quite often have a routine that changes from day to day. So how can I possibly create a routine? I've been working with ChatGPT to design a framework within which lots of things can move around, but I have some cornerstones that are built in there but can be moved within the framework, and playing with different models. What does it look like on a day when there's school? What does it look like on a day when people aren't feeling well? What would it look like if I was by myself for 3 weeks? All these different options, and talking it through with ChatGPT, not only does it give me ideas that I might not have thought of back, I can move things around and nobody gets offended because there's no agenda involved. Instead of asking a friend for advice, I just ask ChatGPT, and if I don't like it, I say, no, I don't want to do that. Give me another option. That is quite liberating for this middle-aged people pleaser who still finds temptation to make people happy, even if the advice they offer is not ideal for me. I will include a list in the show notes where you can get a download of the favourite AI tools I've been using and playing with as somebody with ADHD. It's completely free, and it's just a way for me to say, go and have fun, see what you can do. And now we're going to talk about experimentation, and that's partly what I've been doing with this AI. I've been experimenting and seeing how far it can go, and it does come out with some absolute nonsense. And one of the reasons that experimentation and adaptation are really important whenever you try something new with ADHD is that how it presents in each person, the circumstances of each person's life, and their needs and ability will vary completely. So there's no one tool that will work for every single person with ADHD. But we also struggle with cognitive flexibility. That's one of the executive functions that is affected by ADHD. And so we tend to look for absolutes. We want the right answer. We want the one and done solution. It's partly to do with our education system, but it's also to do with our brains, which is why I mention it here. And when we're asked to be flexible, it can be really difficult because it affects all of our executive functions. We're asked to hold different options, as working memory. We're asked to think about possible futures, which is our planning, our prioritising, which is affected if different things are happening. So I can understand why it's very difficult. When we experiment, really interesting things happen. I'm going to tell you the story of Josiah Wedgwood, and bear with me because this is very relevant. Josiah Wedgwood was born in 1730, and he was a compulsive experimenter, I would say. Not only did he campaign for the abolition of slavery, but he continuously experimented and tried hundreds and hundreds of recipes for each glaze that his factory became famous for. If you've never seen Wedgwood pottery, it's typically pottery with the white figures. Then it's inspired by neoclassical Greece and Rome, which was incredibly popular in the 18th century. But what Wedgwood did was, as soon as he perfected one glaze and it became popular, he would move on to the next one. The next one and the next one, whether it was cream glaze, jasper ware, a green glaze, it didn't matter. He would move on to the next one as soon as someone copied it. And once he understood how to make the production of his pottery efficient, he thought, how can I make the sales more efficient? And when that was working, how can I make distribution more efficient? Almost pioneered some of the very first experiments in sales catalogues, in sailor. He pioneered things like direct mail, selling directly to the customer. He was offering a money-back guarantee. He offered free delivery and even illustrated catalogues. Wedgwood experimented and tried new things all the time, need both for experimentation and for openness to recording the results. He didn't hide away the fact that he was failing. If you look at his notebooks, you will see that each mistake is meticulously recorded. I don't expect you to have to do that, but it is really important to get some data about what is working and what isn't working, because the other aspect of ADHD that can affect our ability to experiment and develop our own way of working is our memory. And although he was the fifth generation of potters in the Wedgwood family, he was the one that committed most radically to experimenting. And the reason I've spent a few minutes talking about Josiah Wedgwood is because all of the information that you get from me or from anybody else about ADHD needs to be looked at through the lens of your ADHD. And that means you're going to have to experiment and adapt things so that they work for you. Whether it's a different app, a planner, a whiteboard, even a way of thinking about things. If we expect to get things right first time, we're going to avoid taking action because we know it's almost impossible to get things right straight away. And learning to experiment, adapt, fail, and keep going is the key to growth with ADHD. So having explained all about experimentation and why I want you to play and get used to failing and trying again, let's look at time and habits with a different agenda. In the past episode talking about time, I looked at what I call standard time interventions, things like externalizing time, using different planners, using whiteboard, using time timers, these visual timers, using your watch to set alarms and reminders, which I do all the time. These are foundational ways to experience time for somebody who has issues with working memory, planning, prioritizing, and so on. But there comes a point where we want to go further than that. We may always need those scaffolds around us, the external structure, which is something that I rely on, but we want things to start to become easier. And one of the ways that most people try to make things easier is by forming habits. A habit is simply a set of behaviours that has been repeated so often it's become automatic and almost unconscious. Because habits are really powerful, people who care about maximising their time, being time efficient, or who want to fit more into their days, to get very excited about habits because it's a way to reduce the mental load, the decision fatigue, and the time it takes to process each of those steps to achieve an outcome that you might want to do every day. How do we form a habit in the first place? Let's get down to the level of your brain before we think about what a habit is. Inside your brain, there are a group of structures called the basal ganglia. They store and they recall a repeated group of behaviours or actions that are repeated frequently and the reward that comes with them. That's the key. There's no such thing as a behaviour without a reward, because otherwise, why would we do it? The reward can take many different forms, of course, but as you can already tell, people with ADHD might find it a little bit more difficult because we have a reward deficiency. Our dopamine cells do not respond in the same way as non-ADHD brains because we don't get the same boost of dopamine in anticipation of the reward. And that's why when books talk about the habit loop, you might think there's something wrong with you, because the loop of the cue, the thing that starts the behaviour, action, the behaviour of the habit, and then the reward, isn't enough in itself for you to take on that behaviour and for it to become an automatic habit or action. Because we have problems with working memory, with impulse control, with self-awareness, with planning and organising, all of these things are involved around the structure and formation of a habit. So from the get-go, from the very beginning, people with ADHD have to work harder to make habits stick. They can stick, but they need a different way to set things up. One of the difficulties with standard habit advice is our reward processing is different. And that's because we almost always prioritise short-term reward over long-term goals way more than our peers of a certain age. We've all seen the marshmallow experiment, where very young children are told they can have 2 marshmallows now, or if they wait 10 minutes, they can have 5. 9 times out of 10, the kids have the 2 marshmallows now, because why would you wait longer for these imaginary marshmallows when there's 2 in front of you? ADHD brains are very like that. If we can have some pleasure, enjoyment, some comfort, some satisfaction now, we will choose that almost every time. It's one of the reasons why I'm currently about 50 pounds overweight. Because habits rely on the reinforcement of a delayed reward, and sometimes that reward can be a month, 6 months, a year in the future, people with ADHD are going to find motivation to keep going with that habit much more challenging. We also prefer a bit of novelty. We like to change things up. We find routine and consistency more challenging to stick to. And that means that the other elements of routine, repetition, are also affected by our ADHD. Even though it matters to us a great deal to form some of these habits, for example, learning to brush your teeth twice a day and do it without a parent or someone else to remind you, it really matters to us. Even then, it can be a challenge to stick to. So much more so when it's something like remembering to put money away for your tax at the end of the week, remembering to send out your invoices, doing your filing, all the admin type tasks that business owners have to do for the end of the year. 364 days of the year, that's in the future. It's not relevant to right now. I hope you can see that your brain, and not you as a person, is what makes forming a habit more difficult. We know that habits are helpful because they save us repeated time of thinking through each step in a process and having to hold it like a live object in your hands instead of having it done automatically. So what can we do when we need to build these habits? I'm going to explore a few options for you to play with. And I do mean play with. I want you to experiment and see which ones are easiest for you to take in this week. So first of all, when we think about habits, we tend to go big. go big or go home could be the ADHD motto generally. And because we have these great big goals, the habits to get us there are really challenging. Not many of us could commit to the type of consistent behaviour that will help you run the London Marathon in under a year from couch to 5K to 26 miles. Start small sounds boring. I said it. It sounds boring. And that is the challenge many people with ADHD face when I say to them, what can you do today that takes you one step closer towards that goal? They're not interested in taking the small step. However, when we look at things like ocean liners, an ocean liner going at 72 degrees in one direction is going to end up in a very different place to the liner that's going at 71 degrees. And I'm making this up because I know nothing about ships because I get sick watching films about the ocean. But that 1 degree is going to make a huge difference. It could be hundreds of miles apart. When I say think small, picture that ocean liner and think about the smallest possible thing that you can do without effort today. The reason that small actions are important is because I want you to celebrate each of them as a success. When you celebrate the small stuff and it reinforces that you can make changes, other changes feel easier. And it helps your brain to anticipate a reward, a celebration, which is the next step, when you do something small, instead of berating yourself for not doing something when you had promised that you would. The second thing to add in is flexibility. Quite often we think, I have to do this activity 5 days a week. If I don't, it's worthless. I have to do this exercise from beginning to end, or it's pointless. There's no reason to celebrate doing any of it. Any action is worth taking if it points you in the direction of where you want to go. And part of a routine matters because it's the action that is going to take you there. Doing part of the routine is important because it's the fact you were committing to the action, not how much of it that you did. Showing up is what matters. Taking any action is what matters, not how much of it you did. Of course, if you can do more, wonderful. For example, today I did about half of my weights routine at 7:30. I just didn't feel strong enough. But I'm really proud of myself for doing half of it because it's a lot better than none. If you want to walk 5 miles a day, celebrate walking 1 mile because that 1 mile is better than zero. The next step to making habit formation easier for you is the external cues and the structure. Now, we know working memory, all of that stuff, all of the ADHD traits make it harder for us to remember. Think about external cues that work for you. Now, I know that you probably have many reminders on your phone or on your watch that you ignore. If they work for you, by all means, use them. You might want to experiment with using a different tune for different activities. For example, I play a James Brown tune, Get Up Off of That Thing, when it's time to do my exercises. I have my trainers on the treadmill in the morning. That prompts me when I go to the bathroom in the morning, I see my trainers, I think, oh, okay, I'm going to go there and come back and do 5 minutes, literally 5 minutes on the treadmill, just to wake myself up. So forming your environment to support the behaviour that you want is going to be a really big help when you have an ADHD brain. The next thing is rewards. Now, if you have dopamine deficiency, which is what ADHD really is, a reward is going to have to be almost instant. And if you're trying to save up for something, can you put something away daily instead of saving it up for the end of the month? Even if it's £1 away every day, that is going to be much more reinforcing for your brain. Think about what small immediate reward is available for you and really focus on it as a reward to help reinforce that loop of behaviour, the habit. And finally, when it comes to mistakes, problems and setbacks, we know they're going to happen. We are humans, we live in a world where stuff happens all the time. It could be your dog needing to go for emergency x-rays. It could be your car not having a charged battery. All of these things are going to get in your way. Account for them in advance and accept you are going to be imperfect. Your efforts will be imperfect, but treat them the same way as Josiah Wedgwood treated all those failed experiments in his kiln. It's just data. It's just information. It's feedback. It's got nothing to do with your worth as a human being or how successful you're going to be in the end. In fact, I would say that if you can persist in spite of the failure, in spite of the setbacks, you are much more likely to succeed in your habit long term, whatever it may be for. And that brings me to the three main problems we're likely to face, apart from the everyday getting in the way stuff. First of all is consistency. And lots of people with ADHD say to me, I'm just not consistent. And when I don't do it once, I never go back. This kind of black or white, all or nothing, is very typical of ADHD. A lot of people think of it with autistic behaviour, but actually it's equally common in ADHD. Think in terms of persistence, not consistence. I don't know if that's an actual word, but it's more important that you are persistent and you continue to pursue your ultimate aim than doing it every single day. Of course, there are instances where it would be ideal if you were able to take the action every day, maybe twice a day. Ultimately, it's more important that you keep going and that you give yourself permission to miss a day and go back. Persistence is more important than consistency. And when it comes to motivation, again, is an ADHD challenge because it requires us to think about doing the same thing over and over again. And that motivation that we often had to begin with, it wears off. When that strikes, think about your meaning. Okay, I mentioned last week the machine, mind and mission model from ADCA. And your mission is your vision. What gets you there? What gets you up in the morning? It's one of the questions that my coach asked me. What gets you up in the morning to do your work? There are ways to think about the meaning of what you're doing that somehow change how motivation feels. It's no longer just about keeping a streak on your app or a cross on your calendar. It's about who you're going to be when that habit becomes a part of you. How will you be in the world and who can you become? Think about the meaning and the value of that habit and not just the what. And finally, again, setbacks happen. Anticipate it. Accept it's going to happen. And know that the most important thing is that you roll with it. You learn to adapt. You might need to move the time that you go for your walk or the day that you do your admin. All of these things that we are trying to make into habits may need to change and adapt. It's very rare that we can't get back up and try again on a different day or in a different way. Remaining flexible and knowing that we will find that flexibility uncomfortable but manageable is an important part of building your self-awareness generally with ADHD. And the biggest changes I've seen in the clients who have great success in coaching are the ones who have that self-awareness and who recognize things like, I find being flexible difficult. This feels uncomfortable, but actually this is amazingly empowering because I know I can. Those are the clients who learn to coach themselves through the sticky points and get back up and deal with the setbacks. Because when we want to change our habits, when we want to make something automatic, when we want to reduce the mental load, the noise, the decision paralysis, the decision fatigue that we experience, we are going to experience some discomfort while our brain changes around that habit. And that's okay. It's all part of our journey. It's not a destination. And the tendency to think of this hurts right now, so I can't keep going, is very much connected to not remembering our bigger vision, the meaning, why we're doing it, and who we want to be when it's become part of our daily routine. So having had a good think about how you're going to be exploring and playing with these different techniques and adapting them for yourself, having understood that your brain wiring makes these challenges more present for you than somebody else, and understanding that you're going to have to personalise and keep personalising things so that they work perfectly for you, I would love to hear from you about what is the habit that you have struggled with in the past, and how has this information changed how you're going to approach it next time? Are you going to start by doing something very small? Are you going to use the ocean liner image? Are you going to remember persistence, not consistency? Are you going to adapt a technique that you've tried before and that just wasn't working because you were trying to be perfect and do it in a way that was not suitable for you and your life or your brain? Let me know and I will share some of your stories next week. Thank you again for joining me today to explore time, habits, brains and Josiah Wedgwood. As always, in the show notes you will find a list of references for further reading, articles and studies that I've used to put this podcast together, along with a short list of my favourite AI tools and some information about upcoming episodes, as well as how you can keep in touch with me between podcasts.